Many people fear treatment because of side effects. Let's listen in on another support group as they talk about treatment.
My name's Joan, and I'm an oncology clinical nurse specialist. Today we're going to talk about symptoms and side effects. Most CLL survivors need some form of treatment throughout their lives. It's important to know about common symptoms and side effects and how to control and manage them. Knowing and describing what you're feeling is helpful to your healthcare team so they can change your therapy if needed, help you feel better, and decrease problems affecting your quality of life. Our guest tonight is Dr. Mark Smith, an oncology clinical pharmacist.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I know this disease can be trying, and I want to help by talking about what to expect in terms of symptoms, side effects of medicines used in treatment, and ways to use medicines to deal with some of these problems. Now, there's a lot of good information out there about how treatments affect your disease. But remember to ask your oncologist or nurse about side effects of your treatments and how they might be managed.
During one of our earlier sessions, we talked about CLL symptoms and noted it's often these symptoms that lead people to see a doctor in the first place. Symptoms like shortness of breath or feeling very tired. Other symptoms occur because of treatment. The most common problems during treatment for CLL are lowered blood cell counts. Other side effects are fatigue, neuropathies, loss of appetite, nausea, diarrhea, and constipation. If we don't talk about the side effects you're having, or if you want to know more, your doctor and nurse can help you manage treatment-related problems. The National Cancer Institute's website also has a link to chronic leukemia, cancertopics/types/leukemia. And treatment-related side effects are described there and more fully in the section called Cancer Topics, Coping with Cancer, cancertopics/coping. Likewise, websites sponsored by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, www.lls.org, and the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, www.nccn.com, include information about CLL, its treatment, and side effects. I also want to mention side effects and symptoms may respond to complementary approaches. Exercise can help relieve fatigue, nausea, and constipation, and improve appetite and mood. Yoga, qigong, progressive muscle relaxation, meditation, guided imagery, and other stress reduction practices are useful for many people. Ask your healthcare team to help you find local resources and experts for adding complementary therapies like these and others to a full plan for dealing with side effects and symptoms. Side effects differ from person to person and can change from one treatment session to the next. Before you begin treatment, talk with your doctor, nurse, social worker, nutritionist, or dietitian, or other people on your healthcare team about possible side effects and ways you and your family can deal with changes you could face. One caregiver correctly said the battle against CLL is too hard to fight alone. You need support to fight. That's been the intent of the group, to make sure no one's dealing with this alone.
One issue I want to bring up is fertility, because once in a while, people in their childbearing years are diagnosed with CLL. And if you're concerned about fertility, talk with your doctor or nurse about fertility issues and the possibility of sperm banking. This discussion has to happen before treatment because chemotherapy and sometimes radiation therapy can result in permanent infertility. Probably the most common and most serious side effect of treatment is damage to the immune system, specifically white blood cells. Because of this, people treated for CLL are at risk for developing infections. Blood cell counts are checked often as patients go through chemotherapy. Thorough hand washing techniques and good oral care are simple ways to minimize chances of infection. Young children are likely to bring home infections. During times when your white blood cell count is especially low, it's a good idea to avoid being around children and crowds of people if you can, and to wash your hands frequently.
In our clinic, we ask people to avoid using rectal thermometers, suppositories, and enemas, any of which can injure the rectal area and allow harmful bacteria to enter the body. Although we don't suggest special diets during times when the white blood cell count is low, we do suggest meats be cooked thoroughly and fresh fruits and vegetables washed well. Many people ask about getting vaccinations before treatment starts. That's a complicated question. Talk with your doctor about which vaccinations you should have and when to get them. For our patients, I've made instruction cards that describe early signs of infection. It's important you have your doctor's telephone number and another number to call when the office is closed. We want patients to notify us right away if they have fever over 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit or 38 degrees centigrade, chills or other signs of infection like redness and pain around incisions or wounds, or painful mouth sores or sore throat. We may be able to do an assessment in our office, though sometimes patients go to clinics or emergency rooms. We try to find the source of the infection and treat it as quickly as possible.
Many medicines used for treatment also decrease number and function of red blood cells and platelets. Fatigue sometimes relates to anemia caused by low red blood cell levels. Less oxygen in the blood can cause fatigue, dizziness, and shortness of breath, especially with activity. One treatment for anemia is red blood cell transfusions.
When I was diagnosed, my doctor said I'd need chemotherapy. The infusion center nurse suggested I ask about having a central catheter inserted into a large vein close to my heart. It would be used for chemotherapy and other medicines, fluids, and blood, and to draw blood samples. A nurse inserted the catheter, and I had it in place throughout treatment. I had to take care of it and watch for potential problems, and I never forgot it was there. But it saved me from lots of needle sticks. Is this something you suggest to people?
Whether someone can benefit from a central catheter, also called a vascular access device, depends on a number of factors. For example, how often and for how long will the patient need to have IV medicines or blood samples taken? Is the patient or caregiver able to take care of the catheter safely so chances of infection are minimized? There are many types of catheters and vascular access devices, so it's important to talk with your doctor or nurse to decide if one would be helpful. They can explain the types of devices and help choose the best one.
I think I've been dealing with CLL longer than anyone here. The last few months have been rough, as I've needed quite a few transfusions. I've been surprised how tired and moody I get right before I need another transfusion.
It hits Jim like a brick. He gets so irritable. We almost know without lab tests he's due for another transfusion.
I feel like a different person. I don't have energy for anything.
Let's talk about that. With transfusions, the doctors are monitoring your blood counts and making decisions about when a transfusion is needed. Being anxious about having blood drawn and what the results might say are common feelings. Low counts can increase tiredness, depression, loss of appetite, and just generally feeling blah. Concern about how often and for how long someone can have transfusions can also affect day-to-day activities and relationships.
I started transfusions when I was diagnosed, and I've had some anxious feelings, but I thought it was all in my head that I was depressed and upset about having this disease. I didn't think about it being related to low counts.
In addition to red blood cells, platelets are another concern. Low platelet levels interfere with blood clotting and cause easy bruising and bleeding. Protecting yourself from injury is important. Things you can do include brushing your teeth with a soft toothbrush, using an electric shaver instead of a razor, blowing your nose gently, and wearing shoes even inside your home. It's important to avoid aspirin or other medicines that can cause bleeding problems unless they're prescribed by your doctor. And avoid sports or other activities that can result in bruises or bleeding. Use of tampons, rectal thermometers, enemas, and rectal suppositories is also discouraged. Talk with your doctor and nurse about ways to protect yourself when your blood counts are low, and put a list of emergency telephone numbers in a place that's easy to find.
Let's talk about nausea and vomiting. The digestive system is affected by some chemotherapies, and in the past, these problems have been hard to manage. These days, nausea and vomiting are fairly well managed with medicines called anti-emetics, used along with steroids and anti-anxiety medicines. Anti-emetics are given before treatment and continued during and for a limited time after treatment if needed. Diarrhea can also occur. The risk of diarrhea increases with the use of some herbal supplements, laxatives, antibiotics, antacids, and other medicines, and in people who have infection or bowel conditions such as irritable bowel syndrome, colitis, or diverticulitis. When diarrhea occurs, checking for infection is a first step. And if present, the infection is treated. Managing diarrhea involves keeping track of fluid intake and output, replacing lost fluids, diet changes, and use of medicines to control and stop diarrhea. Diarrhea can sometimes be prevented with anti-diarrhea medications. We try to ensure patients get enough fluid so dehydration doesn't become a problem. The nutritionist or dietitian helps patients make sure their diets have proper nutrients too. We try to prevent or at least minimize problems up front and avoid more serious problems.
Don't forget about constipation. Jim had a terrible time because we didn't know about constipation until it was already a big problem.
Thank you, Claire. Strangely enough, both constipation and diarrhea can be side effects of CLL treatment. People often take these things lightly, but they can cause major problems. It's important to be proactive to prevent them or to manage them before they get more serious. Constipation is common among cancer patients because of decreased appetite, poor intake of food and fluids, lack of physical activity, and use of pain and anti-nausea medicines. Ask your nurse to help you come up with a plan to prevent constipation.
Something I've had is peripheral neuropathy due to nerves damaged by chemotherapy. It started with numbness and tingling in my fingers and toes, and my doctor tells me it can cause serious pain and problems with walking and using my hands. Luckily, my nurse described this as something that might occur, and as soon as it started, I told her and my doctor. Since I wasn't in pain and the numbness and tingling weren't bad, and the treatment seemed to be working, one dose of treatment was skipped to let my nerves recover. The tingling and numbness got better, and I was able to get treatment when I had to start the next cycle. The doctor also gave me vitamins and a medicine normally used for depression. They worked. My nurse watched my symptoms closely. I was able to continue treatment with slightly lower doses, and the symptoms went away after a few months. But I know some people have to stop the medicine due to problems like this.
At best, it's annoying. At worst, it causes muscle weakness and pain that limits use of legs, feet, and hands. Checkups should include monitoring for early signs of neuropathy. Things like decreased ability to detect hot and cold by touch and signs of muscle weakness. Treatments include vitamin B6 and nutritional supplements with amino acids, pain medicines, antidepressants, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or NSAIDs, and medicines usually given to control convulsions or seizures. Your nurse is probably a good resource for information about signs of peripheral neuropathy and what symptoms you should report to help avoid permanent damage.
I've read physical therapy, relaxation, and acupuncture can help.
Yes, and sometimes just gentle massage of painful areas with cocoa butter is comforting. It's also something that's easy for caregivers to do.
I have friends who've had hair loss from chemotherapy, and I guess I thought they made a big deal out of something that wasn't important. But when it happened to me, I understood. My hair was my identity and made me feel attractive. For me, the hair loss was really devastating. Maybe it's different for guys. You know, they can just wear a baseball hat and look pretty normal. But, you see, my hair is all grown back now.
I disagree. Hair loss was major for me. For most of my life, I've had a full head of hair, along with a beard and lots of body hair. I lost it all, even my eyelashes and pubic hair. When friends saw me, they knew I was very sick and maybe thought I was dying. This was my most distressing side effect, even more so than nausea and vomiting. Those things came and went and could be managed, but hair loss was with me the entire time I was treated. I couldn't hide or disguise it at all.
There have been many attempts to find a way to prevent or diminish hair loss. Unfortunately, so far, nothing's really worked. Most of my patients shave their heads rather than deal with hair falling out gradually and in clumps. I've seen friends, relatives, even coworkers band together with everyone shaving their heads too in support of someone who loses hair from cancer treatment. It's important for people to know hair loss is likely and to prepare for this. Getting a wig or hairpiece before hair loss begins helps match hair color and style. The American Cancer Society and other community resources offer help for people wanting to use wigs and hairpieces, and there are many stores and catalogs that supply fun and interesting hats and scarves. The Look Good, Feel Better program, a free, community-based service, was founded and developed by the Personal Care Products Council, supported by the cosmetic industry, the National Cosmetology Association, and the American Cancer Society. Oncology nurses and social workers can help you find these resources. Programs for women offer beauty tips, group workshops to address makeup, skin, and nail care, and ways to deal with hair loss with wigs, turbans, and scarves. Salon consultations with volunteer cosmetologists are available in some areas for women unable to attend group workshops. Look Good, Feel Better resources for men are a bit more limited, but include a brochure available at 1-800-395-LOOK. That's 1-800-395-5665. Or at local American Cancer Society offices. Additional information is included on the Look Good, Feel Better page of the ACS website, www.cancer.org.
One of my medicines, the steroid dexamethasone, affected my memory and mood.
After he started treatment, Jim was difficult to live with. I didn't know what to do.
I felt like a different person. We didn't understand what was making me feel and act that way.
Dexamethasone, prednisone, and or prednisolone, all steroids, may be part of your treatment. Steroids cause cancer cell death, which is a good thing, but people often have side effects, irritability and mood swings, depression, problem sleeping, weight gain, increased appetite, general body swelling, flushing and sweating, muscle cramping, digestive problems like heartburn, gas, and taste changes, changes in blood glucose levels, changes in sexual function, and a letdown effect when steroids are stopped suddenly. Talk with your oncologist and nurse about ways to minimize and manage these effects. Sometimes, adjusting your medicine schedule and adding other medicines can help. Something like taking steroids early in the morning, for example, and taking an over-the-counter or prescription drug can help with digestion. Sometimes, seeing a specialist is helpful for complex steroid-related side effects.
My counselor, Nancy, helped with these concerns. My anxiety and stress were bad, but from her, I learned coping strategies, deep breathing, muscle relaxation exercises, and something called guided imagery that have really worked. She gave me the Living Beyond Cancer CD from the Cancer Survival Toolbox, which has instructions for these strategies. I use it once, twice, or more times every week, depending on how I'm feeling. It also helped a lot with the stressed-out feelings I got when my next bone marrow biopsies were coming up and I couldn't sleep. Nancy said these strategies are part of a proven therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy. Instead of thinking everything's out of my control, I stop myself and instead think there are self-care tactics I can do on my own that work for me and give me back some control. Changes in my thinking and using these tools have helped me feel calmer. I'm going to be treated off and on, maybe for the rest of my life. So now I've got some strategies to manage my stress levels that I can use regularly, too.
I want to bring up something that was a problem for Charlie and me early on. He might not like that I talk about this, but I'm going to bring up sex. Because we're retired, I think sex isn't something that doctors and nurses think that folks our age are concerned about, but it is. And it isn't just the sex act. It's also about being close and intimate. I mean, things like hugging and holding hands, cuddling, even communication. When Charlie was diagnosed, I was almost afraid to touch him. We never talked about sex or intimacy much before, so this was hard for us to handle.
It's hard for me to talk about this stuff, especially with ladies present. When I was diagnosed, I was tired, depressed, and angry. I wasn't talking to Sarah about what I was feeling, and our relationship was suffering. My doctor or nurse didn't bring up sex, so I figured they didn't want to talk about it either.
I saw an article about a weekend workshop on sexuality for cancer survivors. I don't know how, but I got Charlie to go. We both learned so much. At first, the workshop topics and discussions were embarrassing for me, but everyone was going through similar things, and as the weekend went on, we started having a good time. We talked about ways to find time together as a couple, changes in the way we express our sexuality depending on what's going on, like finding bedding, pillows, and other things to support positions that make sex more comfortable and safe. And I learned about using lubricants to deal with the vaginal dryness that's been a problem ever since menopause.
Thanks, Sarah, for bringing this up. You're so right. Sexuality is important to all of us. Bottom line, there are lots of resources, including caring professionals, to help. The American Cancer Society's website, www.cancer.org, keyword sexuality, has sections on sexuality And the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society has a fact sheet on sexuality and intimacy. There's also an American Cancer Society book, Couples Confronting Cancer, that's available from local American Cancer Society units and may also be on local library shelves. Two other books, Man, Cancer, Sex, and Woman, Cancer, Sex, explore the impact cancer can have. One other thought. If sexuality hasn't been brought up by your doctor or nurse, it may be they expect you to raise these issues if they're important to you. They may also lack the knowledge to offer you what you need. In this case, ask for a referral to another professional who is prepared and willing to offer this kind of expertise.
Another thing that's bothered me is how tired and weak I feel. Why does this happen? Is there a way to deal with it? I don't want it taken over my life.
Sam, you're not alone. Fatigue and weakness are very common and can greatly affect your life. No one knows what exactly causes fatigue, but most likely it relates to several things. Reduced physical strength and levels of activity, decreased appetite and intake of food, changes in sleep, wake patterns, low blood counts, pain, stress, infection, and anemia are just some of the factors related to fatigue. Dealing with fatigue can include medicines and exercise, reducing stress and worry, conserving energy, and promoting more normal sleep-wake cycles. Mark, would you talk a little about medicines used to treat fatigue?
The first thing is to figure out if there's something causing the fatigue that can be treated. We would check for anemia, depression, anxiety, insomnia, and find ways to deal with those problems when they occur.
I saw an article telling cancer patients to hit the gym. It seemed odd to use exercise to deal with fatigue. But I talked to my doctor, and she told me research shows low to moderate exercise can help during and after cancer treatments. I learned it's best to start exercise before fatigue really sets in. Even in my small town, I found the local fitness center has a program designed for cancer patients to speed recovery and reduce the fatigue of chemotherapy and radiation. I went to this program and started swimming again. I sleep better. And it's definitely decreased my fatigue.
I was feeling so tired, stressed, and worried all the time. My girlfriend offered to take me to a yoga center for a class. I talked to my doctor. He really didn't know much about it, but looked at the pictures in a yoga book and marked okay on the poses he thought would be safe. My nurse said to explain my situation to the instructor, what I could do and what I should avoid. And you know, between yoga and the meditation that's part of the class, my stress levels have really improved. And I don't feel nearly as tired.
Simple walking, especially in a favorite place, can keep bones healthy and muscles strong and often helps people cope with nausea, fatigue, constipation, and depression. Being in an exercise program with other people offers social and emotional benefits too. Talk with your doctor or nurse, and maybe consult a physical therapist or fitness instructor who knows about fitness programs for people with cancer. You can begin looking for an exercise program by calling local offices or exploring websites of the American Cancer Society, the YWCA, and the Cancer Support Community.
My fatigue is related to lack of sleep. I used to have coffee every day, sometimes tea at night. Those things, plus the stress that went along with my diagnosis and treatment, messed up my sleeping. I was talking with a nutritionist about my diet and mentioned my sleep problem. She suggested ways to reduce caffeine, drinking decaffeinated coffee and tea, drinking water instead of soft drinks, avoiding chocolate, especially in the late afternoon and evening. Also, I don't drink too much after dinner, so I don't have to get up to go to the bathroom during the night. And almost every day, Claire and I go for a walk. These things have helped me sleep better.
Doctors and nurses have begun to see cancer-related fatigue as important, and many track fatigue at clinic visits. Sorting through factors that disturb your sleep patterns is a first step towards solving this problem. Seeing a sleep specialist can be helpful to some people, too.
There are so many things to think about that I need to do. How can I keep it all straight?
Having and being treated for CLL presents each of you with your own set of needs. Right up front, I suggest you ask for and keep copies of your hospital and clinic reports. It's easy to put together a three-ring binder or accordion file to organize your records. You can also use a calendar to keep track of appointments and to note if and when side effects occur. A journal can help keep track of how you're feeling, how long a symptom lasts, and what makes it better or worse. You might want to set up a system on a computer for all this. If you need help, a friend, child, or grandchild might be able to assist you. They would enjoy helping you, too. It's important to have summaries of your treatments so you can give your primary care provider and other specialists that information. You may also be given a plan for follow-up care or a survivorship care plan. I work with each patient to develop his or her survivorship care plan, so it's tailored to his or her unique needs. It can include tips about exercise, healthy eating, stress reduction, and community resources. It can also map out your doctor appointments, diagnostic tests, ways to deal with lingering problems from treatment, and describe how to assess new symptoms that may need attention. CLL may not be curable, but there are many treatments available to help control the disease and improve the quality of your life.